You're listening to Heartland Politics with Robin Johnson, a presentation of WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Heartland Politics show and podcast, which is aired on and distributed by WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR. WVIK is the flagship public radio station in the Quad Cities region of northwestern Illinois and eastern Iowa. I'm your host, Robin Johnson, and today I'm very pleased to have on my show the congressman representing the 17th District in Illinois, which, of course, includes Rock Island County and areas north, south, east. You all know him. He's Eric Sorensen. And Congressman, thank you so much. I'm sure your schedule is very hectic, but I appreciate you taking the time to visit today.
No, it's always good to make some time for you, Robin.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Well, you're finishing up your first term, and I guess that my first mm-hmm. question is just looking back, it's been an interesting 2 years. What do you regard, I guess, is your biggest accomplishments? I mean, maybe even in the sense of legislatively, but also personally, because, you know, a congressman does two things. There's a lot of votes, but there's other things you do back here as an advocate.
Right. You know, I have an office in Rock Island and I have an office in Washington. And, you know, I have this unbelievable honor of being able to work, whether it's in a divided Congress, but, you know, without having that background in politics. But most of the things that a member of Congress does should never have to do with politics. And so, you know, for me, it's, you know, when I would say the best day of my life. You know, it wasn't, you know, what people probably would think. You know, the best day of my life was meeting Roald Zvonik, that 98-year-old veteran from World War II. So the background story here to get to that day where I could pin those medals on him, you know, two constituents reached out to my casework team with a, you know, kind of a sad story. You know, their father, Roald Zvonik, he served in World War II. He served in Vietnam as well over his dedicated career. He earned six medals, and but he never received them. And, you know, and then so when we started working on this, and this was a project that I wanted to see to the end, there was a fire in a VA facility that burned the records that we needed. You know, and so we knew what we were fighting for. And so our team was able to recover the documentation that we needed to get the six medals to Roald Zvonik that he never received. When we were in East Moline and at the senior center, I'll never forget every part of this day. I walked into that room not knowing how important that was going to be. There were 100, 150 people in there. Roald Zvonik drove himself, 98 years old, walked in with his cane. And he is a spitfire. He is somebody, everybody here, if you don't know Roald Zvonik, you should know. And for me, as a member of Congress, to pin those on his lapel, on his shirt, I didn't know that I was going to be the one with my own hands to pin them on a 98-year-old veteran. While someone acknowledged to the crowd of people what each one of those meant. And so, yeah, that's my proudest accomplishment, you know, in 2 years in Congress. And it really is about working for that one person that needed me. But then also now that that story has been told and that people are now hearing the story of Roald Zvonik. Last night, when I was welcoming our veterans back home from their honor flight at the Quad City Airport, I had a gentleman come up to me. And he said, you know, Eric, you know, I really appreciate you serving our veterans. And I received two Purple Hearts, but I never got them. Would you help me? And so now the greatest thing that I've ever done may happen again if I'm elected.
I can tell you, Congressman, as the son of a World War II veteran, and there's medals right over my right shoulder here that my dad got. He served in World War II in the Korean War, and he also was on the honor flight. That means a lot from all of us whose parents served It is special, and those medals will stay in my family forever. So that's an indication of how important that is to us.
People don't know unless they happen to come to Washington and knock on the door of their congressman and come into my office. When I'm sitting at my desk, over my left shoulder are the photographs that my grandpa, George Sorensen, took in World War II. He was a photographer for the Navy back in World War II. And he took pictures of the United States Capitol and the Jefferson Memorial in the 1940s. And I have those pictures framed. I have some of the pictures framed from when he was flying over the beaches of France. And my grandpa never got to see me, become a United States congressman. He never thought that those photographs were ever going to be framed and hung on the wall on Capitol Hill. But it reminds me of what I'm doing. It's because of the people that came before me that I have to make sure that our future ahead of us is better.
You know, and the thing for our listeners, the younger ones especially, you may think, well, why didn't they have their medals before? This generation was so different, as you know. They didn't. They were just doing their duty, their service, and they come back. And then for my dad, he had a few medals, but then he found out later he qualified for these, and that's when he set out to get them. And your predecessor, Lane Evans, was very instrumental in helping him.
You know, and I've gotten to know a lot of veterans over the course of the past 2 years. They're from all over the district. And here's the thing. When a soldier goes off to war or comes back, there are so many different services that a lot of these guys and these gals, they don't feel that they deserve. They feel like there's someone worse off than them. And they don't want to be able to take something if it means that somebody isn't going to get what they need, right? And so a lot of this is working to connect people who should be more proud of the things that they've done. They're heroes to us. And, you know, I think if every one of us figures out something more that we can do for our veterans who have come home, it's not only better and gratifying and also helping our neighbors and our communities, but it builds the value that we need as Americans, because we need good Americans to want to do those jobs, to want to go off. And, you know, if I would have known when I was a kid that I could have gone and become a meteorologist in the Navy, I might have done it. But I didn't have that chance, or at least I didn't think I did at the time.
And I'm sitting here thinking, and we'll get to some of the other questions, but this is an interesting and personal topic for me. But I mean, it's a reminder, too, of what brings our country together, which is what we need right now more than anything else. Mm-hmm. The shared sacrifice of folks who fight on our behalf, who enlist on our behalf, who go overseas on our behalf. I guess my thought is that this is another example, again, what binds us together all as Americans instead of something that divides us.
Right. It's, you know, and I've learned a lot from the experience of even my next door neighbor, Jerry. He's an Iraq War veteran, just retired from the arsenal just this summer. And, you know, for the 10 years that I've had that I've been able to have, you know, live in this neighborhood in Moline and have the house next door to Jerry. Just to be able to sit on the deck and listen to him. You know, a lot of veterans want to be heard, but we have to be there for them. And, you know, and one of the greatest things that I get to do as a member of Congress is to continue the work that other people have had, right? I never got an opportunity to meet Lane Evans. I wish I could have, but you know what? There's so many people that have stories about Lane Evans and how he did something good for them. You know, and that's one of the driving reasons why I want to do what Lane Evans did in his tenure in Congress. But then it's also doing what Sherry Bustos did. She, for five terms, was on the House Agriculture Committee. I'll tell you, when I first got to Congress and we're going through the different options for different committee assignments, you know, I wasn't very strong in agriculture. You know, I didn't grow up on a farm, but you know what? Every place I've lived in this district in Illinois has been within a half a mile of a cornfield, right? It is a part of us. And so I wanted to be on the agriculture committee because this district is the capital of agriculture in the world, you know, whether we realize it or not. And so being on the House Agriculture Committee drives a lot of what I do going forward because, you know, whether it's making sure that our veterans are taken care of or making sure our farmers are taken care of, these aren't red or blue things. These are American things.
How do you, I mean, and I know your one of your passions is climate policy. I think it's interesting that of your choice of being on agriculture. My question comes down to your discussions with farmers about climate. I mean, it's one thing to talk to them about bean prices, foreign markets, things like that. Do you get into discussions with them on climate? And it seems, on the outside, it would seem like that might be a hostile audience. And I'm not stereotyping. I'm just thinking, well, you know, I wonder how open they would be to a discussion and maybe changing or whatever. But have you had those experiences and how have they gone?
Yeah, I mean, this goes back for, 22 years as a meteorologist, right? It is as I was, I'll be honest with you, when I got my Bachelor of Science degree from NIU, there wasn't any climate science in the curriculum. And so it forced me as a meteorologist to figure out if what I was hearing was true. And so, I delved into a lot of the bulletins of the American Meteorological Society, and I went to, a lot of presentations and lectures to understand that this is something that I need to communicate as a professional meteorologist. And so I took that risk, back in 2009. To start talking about how the climate was changing. But also, I never told anyone that they were doing anything wrong, because that's not how the way that we're going to solve problems. It's helping to guide people in the right direction. And so I would give climate talks in barns. I remember specifically there was a dairy farm in Stevenson County. I was with the Farm Bureau and, I was nervous that I was going to hear feedback from the people I was talking to. Actually, I should have, when I look back on it, I should have been nervous that it's really hard to talk over the moos of cows in a dairy barn. And so, and then I got to a point where the people of this district, I worked in Rockford in the Quad Cities, and people had told me, they're like, we can't believe everybody about this issue. But we believe our Eric Sorensen on this issue. So as the climate is changing, it's not about arguing who's causing it or, things like that. The argument needs to end, but we need to make sure that we're focused on resilience and we're focused on what is ahead of us. And that's one of the reasons why, when I put together the roundtable of agriculture constituents, it helped lead me in the direction of being able to say yes and vote for a farm bill, because these were the farmers that had, we had earned each other's trust over 20 years, and we need to continue to build on that trust.
You're listening to Heartland Politics on WVIK, Quad Cities NPR. I'm your host, Robin Johnson, and my guest today is the Honorable Congressman from the 17th District in Illinois, Eric Sorensen. We've been talking a little bit here about its most important accomplishment, which I think our listeners will find different but refreshing. We started talking about agriculture a little bit in terms of the climate. I think it's interesting around here. Most of the farmers I talk to consider themselves conservationists.
Oh, absolutely.
I guess you just mentioned the farm bill. I know it's hung up. Are there some measures in there that you've been able to advocate for that kind of bring the sides together, so to speak, and kind of address any climate issues relating to agriculture?
Absolutely, Robin. Number one that I hear over and over and over again is securing and bolstering crop insurance. It doesn't take a meteorologist to tell you we're seeing more of these extreme events that are happening more frequently. We're getting times of these huge droughts in between huge floods. And, the derecho in 2020 that came through. I'll never forget, I was in the weather center watching the data come in, and all of a sudden we were getting 100 mile an hour winds from this derecho. That was a storm that in my head as a meteorologist for 20 years, I didn't think could happen. Okay. But now it is being prepared that if that happens again, or what if two derechos happen in a growing season? What if it wipes out entire farms? What if we go from a flood to a drought? We're going to need to make sure that we have the right insurance for our farmers so that they don't give up on this livelihood. And so that's what's important to me, is making sure that I do what is right by our farmers. Also, it's looking at sustainable aviation fuel. A lot of people have not heard about this yet. And so this is a good podcast for people to learn about it. Go Google it. It's SAF. Sustainable aviation fuel is what, in my district, what UPS Airlines, Amazon Air, and United Airlines are going to need to meet their climate goals. Sustainable aviation fuel is going to be made out of the soybeans that are going to be crushed and turned into a sustainable fuel for them. Because when we think about the climate crisis, we're doing nothing in aviation yet. We have to do more. But here's the thing. Our farmers are going to be the heroes in this. They just don't know it yet, And then also, if I can go a little bit more into the weeds with the farm bill, it's reference prices for corn and soybean producers. We're really good at it. We have really healthy soil. This is the most fertile soil in the world between Chicago and Des Moines. And so what we're doing right now is helping to subsidize other ag products across the country. And so our farmers here are paying for crops that don't work in other parts of the United States. I speak about this regularly. Actually, I'm working on legislation that will fix this problem in the 119th Congress, and I know, because I can work with them, that there are Republican members on the other side of the aisle in House Ag that want to get that done too. And so, I think those are the things we need to focus on, and making sure that we reward, our farm families for doing the right thing.
I got to ask this, with your background, which is unique, am I correct that you're the only meteorologist in Congress?
Right.
Is that
right? Yeah.
Do you have members come up to you, whatever party or whatever, and go, hey, what's going on with this weather? Or,
I do. And so also, I hate to go back to crop insurance, but I sit next to Congresswoman Kat Kamick. She represents Central Florida. I sit next to her on House Ag. And after Hurricane Ian came in and decimated Central Florida, we were talking about crop insurance, because she said, a lot of my family growers, they're growing oranges and they haven't seen payouts from their insurance yet. And I said, well, that was like a year ago. And she goes, exactly. So if the payouts don't happen, then they're not going to be able to do their jobs. And she said, and then I said, well, what happens if there's another hurricane? And she goes, we're not going to grow oranges in the state of Florida anymore. Think about that. And so that came from a Republican member of Congress who is worried about her own district. And I said, well, I'm being the only meteorologist in Congress. If you need help, I'm there for you. So it goes beyond just what my previous job was. It means that now I get to be the only person that can talk science in this world of divisive politics.
Along those same lines, I know you've been active in advocating for help for communities. And this is another part of the job that people, I hope, understand that, again, part of it's voting, part of it's an advocate for folks here. But this issue of lead pipes and the danger it causes, especially to young people. I know down where from Monmouth and Galesburg, I think, have benefited from that. Right. What that issue is so critical and to you, and why have you kind of personally taken on to be an advocate for resolving that?
It was a woman by the name of Dr. Mona Hanna Atisha. She is a pediatrician who was seeing sick children come into her pediatric office. And she thought to herself, this seems like this is lead poisoning, but it can't be. And Dr. Mona, she questioned, you know, with the water officials. And the water officials ensured, no, the water is safe. And so months went by. She was still getting different children coming in with what appeared to be lead poisoning. Turns out that the city officials in Flint lied to her. But Dr. Mona, she persisted and she didn't give up. And she went to the next person. She talked to the next person. She went to the next person. And then people started testing the water. And the water that the city said was safe was not safe. Dr. Mona is the reason why she didn't just save kids and babies. She saved so many thousands of people living in Flint, Michigan. She's the hero. And I got to sit down with her. Back when I became a fellow of the Society for Environmental Journalists, I had a one-on-one with her. It was really powerful. And so, you know, after, you know, Jackson, Mississippi happened, you know, and then I get to be in Congress, and then I see the stack of requests from local leaders on both sides of the aisle requesting funding for water because there are too many lead pipes. And I'm like, I have to do what I can do. I have to advocate there. And so, you know, for here, it's like literally just down the street on 12th Street from where I live in Moline, it is replacing the pipes there because there are so many lead pipes just up the hill from downtown. You know, it's bringing $1 million back to Monmouth so that they can get rid of the lead pipes. And then I talked to some of the parents who have legitimate concerns about turning on the faucet and giving their kids a glass of water. You know, we need to be able to trust that the water that we drink is safe. And if that's the bipartisan thing that I can get across in Congress, that's the thing I'm going to champion.
We seem to have a lot of incidences of that. Is this common across the country or is it just in the Midwest in our area?
So Illinois 17 has some of the highest numbers of lead pipes in the nation. You go back to a lot of this has to do with history of when, you know, these cities, Rockford and the Quad Cities and Peoria and Bloomington, when these cities were sprouting up, you know, lead was used in the building materials, you know, even in the paint, even in some of the water towers that we're working on replacing from the 1950s. You know, there's maybe lead underneath that paint. We have to take care of these things. And it is a very, it's a, unfortunately, but fortunately, it's a very Illinois thing.
Yeah. Congressman, we're down. I got a couple more minutes here, and I like to just leave it open, the final question. I wanted to ask what you're hearing about. There's a lot of big issues out there. We didn't get to them, but that's okay. Inflation, the border, abortion, a lot of big issues out there. And I know you travel around the district a lot. You can kind of maybe what is the big issue people are sharing with you? What are you picking up on? And also just in these last 2 or 3 minutes, your closing argument, so to speak, to voters, if they're still undecided out there before the election on Tuesday.
Look, Robin, I think that's a great question. I think I have two answers for it. Number one, it is the, I don't want to say the usual thing, but unfortunately, we're on the other side of the pandemic and costs are too high. It's groceries, it's gas, it's prescription drugs. I have legislation to lower prescription drugs. But then number two, it's really this divisive politics today. People hate that too. People want to have an outlook that is good. They want partly sunny, not partly cloudy. And so they want to be able to live and raise their families and feel safe in their communities. And so when I focus on those things, you know, it's listening to the grandmothers and how they talk about their grandkids. It's having an understanding for young people that they need to get out and make their voices heard. Because, you know, for instance, I like to think of election day on Tuesday. That is your last day to vote. It's not election day. It's just the last day to vote. Today's election day, too. You can go stand in line. I stood for 5 minutes and that was it. And I voted. It's really easy to do. Go out and vote now because Tuesday is the deadline. Don't get to Tuesday and have a very busy day where you didn't get a chance to go and vote. Find a time to do that between now and then, because there is so much on the line. Because we're either gonna go forward or go backwards, you know. But people really are gonna be able to make that decision between now and election day. And you know, in the case of you know, their weatherman neighbor who's working for them in Congress, you know, I have faith that the people in this district see my work, they see the value of it, and hopefully I can continue this, the most honorable job I've ever had.
I want to squeeze in one last one. If should you win, are you going to serve on the same committees, or will you seek to maybe make a change, or have you even thought about it yet?
No, I mean, I will tell you for certain, agriculture will continue. I want to continue the legacy that Congresswoman Sherry Bustos had, and especially with the legislation that I have concerning agriculture, I need to be able to have that seat on House Ag to be able to keep doing the job that I want to do for the people.
Okay. Well, again, our guest today on Heartland Politics has been Eric Sorensen, the congressman from Illinois' 17th Congressional District. The election is Tuesday. We're recording this early. I hope everybody out there votes. And Congressman, thank you so much for taking the time. Again, I know you've got a very hectic schedule, and it means a lot that you made this a priority.
No, and thank you, Robin, and thanks for your listeners for making this a priority, too.
Listening to Heartland Politics with Robin Johnson, a presentation of WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR. You can follow Heartland Politics at WVIK.org or wherever you subscribe to podcasts.